Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is June, 6/17, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got it right.
17.
Yeah, I got it right.
Juneteenth is the end of the week.
Wait, is Juneteenth
Friday?
Friday.
It's not Saturday.
No, it's Friday.
I thought it was. It's not. So it moves every year.
Because
the 19th moves every year, nigga. What is? I don't know.
Didn't you go to HBCU?
I gotta be honest. I didn't even know what Juneteenth was till about 15 years ago. I thought it was the first day of summer.
Well, here's the thing. I think that's the summer solstice. But I think that's a fair point. A lot of people, Juneteenth was regional until really, I would say, the increase of the digital age, because it's the date that slaves in Texas found out they were free, even though they had been free for 2.5 years.
So Texas was popping off with it mostly.
Well, that region, right? So it was a celebration there, but now, you know, as the internet has broken down regional barriers and stuff like that. Because if you take it from the point of view that none of us were free till all of us were free, you can kind of look at it as like, some people phrase it as like, it's the official end of slavery because that was the last group of slaves to be freed. But you know, so I do appreciate the fact, I didn't know what Juneteenth was until I was an adult either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't really know.
And like, I know in Alabama and stuff, they have May Day. So there have been different celebrations that are similar, but I find it interesting that this year in this current climate, a lot of companies are jumping on it. Like several companies I know are giving it as, holidays, like,
yeah,
moving forward. Like,
matter of fact, today, Governor Andrew Cuomo has, I guess, is starting or in the process of doing some legislature to make it a state holiday, a New York state holiday.
I feel like if we're doing that without talking about the why, it's an empty gesture.
Yeah, so.
What do you think, Inka? We have a guest. We should
have a guest. So go ahead, introduce the guest now, and I'm explaining. So, and then I'm explaining to y'all why we have a guest this particular week.
We have friend to the show, friend to all of us, mother to our internet, our collective internet niece, Ivy. We have Inka, aka Soul Almondy, joining us on the pod this week. She has a long time steadfast listener, and I think this is the first time we've actually had her on the show.
So we're
welcome, Inka.
Thank you. And,
and now Jeffrey wants to complain about
I had her come on the show because obviously, like, you know, we communicate a lot via the Al Gore's internet and the Twitters, and I just got sick of y'all two niggas not watching Insecure. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a big goddamn show. It's big with the blacks. This week was a season finale. It was a lot going on.
I watched.
You watched one episode, nigga. You ain't seen the other nine.
I get it.
You don't get it. You don't know. It's a whole bunch of shit out that you ain't gonna know.
Nigga, Molly's awful. I get it.
No, it's more than that. So anyway, me and Inka were talking via the Twitter, and it came to me. I said, you know what? I need to get somebody on this show, especially this particular week, who watches this show. It's such a culturally impactful show to our culture. I needed somebody on here that I could kind of talk about instead of me explaining this shit and you two niggas looking at your goddamn phones. Naima's on this bullshit about it. I'm gonna watch it at some point. Like, nigga, it's over.
I know. I get it. And you know what? I understand.
We don't know what's coming back. Honestly, with the Rona, we don't know when it's coming back.
I mean, the show takes 2-year breaks anyway. It's not like it was coming back before 2022, regardless of what.
They're all getting more busy and stuff,
I'm not mad. I'm not mad you brought Inka on. I'm not mad you need to tag somebody in.
Yes.
A lot of people are surprised that I have not engaged in the show this season. And listen, I've been hearing the commentary about it. I feel like I know half the goddamn plot lines. I even know what happened in the finale. I was trying to skip around it. I fucking couldn't. But it's like, I don't know. I cannot explain it. When it started, I was like, eh, I can take it or leave it. And I was just never roped in enough to get in it. I just was never engaged enough to be like, I really want to see this. It's a weird thing. And I've had it happen to me before with shows where, like, if I miss the beginning of the season, I just don't feel like catching up. And I'll be like, I'll get to it when I get to it.
All right, well, Inka, let's talk.
Let's do it.
And I guess, bro, you could chime in with your limited knowledge at some point. So, first of all, let's talk about an overall. What did you think of the season overall?
I thought it was excellent. I thought there was a few episodes that lagged here and there, but we needed to build the story up into, you know, the block party, so on and so forth. But I feel like the conflicts were realistic. We've all had that friend that kind of ghosts us when they get a boyfriend or whatever. I thought that, you know, everybody hates their job or has some kind of conflict at work. So I get where Molly is coming from. I thought it was great. It was extremely unfinished.
Mm.
Like, we could have more episodes maybe. Mm. And I hate Condola's storyline, but.
Okay, I'm going to get to Condola in a second. So I agree. I thought it was a great season. And I think that message of the season was, you know, they kind of had these different, you know, relationships and basically love stories throughout, whether it was Molly and Andrew, Issa and Lawrence, Lawrence and Condola, little Nathan, you know. But I think at the end of it all, the love story was Molly and Issa.
I mean, that's always been a central relationship of the show, right?
Yeah, but obviously not like romantic, but it showed like they're the ones who like broke up and got back together at the end. You know what I'm saying?
If you think about it though, women of our age, so I'll say older millennials because I'm 38, a lot of us marry later. A lot of us are choosing to not have children. So the central relationships in our lives happen to be those ones with our girls. So for me, in that way, it was super realistic. Like, none of my friends got married until I'm probably the youngest one of my friends.
And
when did I get married? 36?
Okay.
So, and I'm the only baby, so it makes sense to me that they would focus on the Molly-Issa dynamic more than anything else.
Yeah, that was kind of like the undertone. So, two quick questions I have for you before we kind of dig into the finale. One question, I never quite got the Condola Venom throughout the season. I never got why so many people didn't like her. But, you know, again, I'm a man. I know women obviously look at certain things differently in a relationship from a different angle. So there might be things that I just missed as to why so many women didn't connect with her. So can you give me some of that?
I don't know that I can articulate why so many people hate canola oil or whatever we're calling her.
Mess a name up already.
Y'all done jacked this poor child's name up.
Nobody don't call her by a regular name no more. Nobody.
I've seen so many names for this woman. But you know what? I know I didn't watch the show, but it might be for the same reason that people weren't fucking with Tasha. Nobody liked Tasha either.
Can I tell you what I think?
Which Tasha you talking about?
Lawrence, working at the bank.
Oh, yeah.
So what I think the issue with the Venom was that what I thought was, like, Condola was getting the best of Lawrence. Like, she was reaping the benefits of all of the shit that he had kind of gone through.
I got you.
Without any of the work, I guess. And I think that there was a little bit of sort of projection.
Yes, you're not going to be alone with me.
I don't think a little bit of projection. I think a lot of projection.
Yes.
Go ahead, Inka.
You're not going to be a bum on my couch for 3 years and not even celebrate my birthday. And then you taking the new chick to, you know, Santa Barbara or wherever they went.
Yeah.
that week. I'm going to have a new girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, okay. I guess I see that. I mean,
it was like, it was like he hit his stride and she got the benefit of him hitting his stride.
He's the ring the alarm girl.
Yeah.
But I see that.
Also on a patio, I could not handle her ponytail for the first couple of episodes. It was unfinished. They could have dipped it in hot water. I was not happy with it.
You just wasn't fucking with her, period. You know, I actually liked her. I mean, I think she's attractive. I think that, you know, she obviously, she seemed to have her shit together as far as like professionally. You know, she seemed to be on point. I like the fact that even when all the things happened with, you know, her and Lawrence, she still didn't leave Issa in a lurch as far as the. She still called all the vendors. She didn't like turn around and be like, yo, don't, I'm not doing this event, so don't fuck with her. She came to make sure she didn't stay, but she came to make sure everything was cool. Remember, she came.
Don't remember it that way.
Which things?
She magically showed up at the end. Remember, Issa was making the calls, and the guy called her or something and was like, the flyer, you know, updates, and where's the whatever? And she was like, oh, I was supposed to get on that, and immediately texted Condola, like, what's up? Where are you?
Yeah, I remember Condola definitely ghosted her for a little bit because she was going through her shit with Lawrence. I don't know. I liked her, I think, more than most people liked her. But let's move past that. Go ahead.
I think my other issue with, you know, Condominium.
Damn, you can't even say her name. You hate her.
You can't let a nigga affect your job. Like, that can't ever be a wave that you're on. Like, ever. Regardless of anything now, clearly he chose you. That's why you're even in the mix. So for you to ghost like that, it was just unprofessional and weird, and okay. I didn't like it.
Okay. So throughout the season, we saw Issa and Molly have a huge breakdown of their relationship. They broke up, basically. They weren't fucking with each other at all. They had a big fight, almost fist fight at one point. And what did you think about... Wait, before we get to that, sorry. Especially being a mom, what did you think about the Tiffany storyline?
I thought it was really, really well done. For a lot of us, postpartum is not this like pretty thing where somebody notices it and then you go and see a counselor and everything's cool. Like, there's this gradual breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
No one talks to you about it, so you don't know what's going on. And I kind of like that throughout the season, they kind of weaved it in, but they didn't explicitly explain that that's what she was going through.
It wasn't like a postpartum episode.
Yeah, it wasn't heavy-handed.
A very special episode of postpartum.
Yeah. Yes. It wasn't lost on me, and I'm just from my perspective that it was Derek, who's the husband,
mm-hmm.
and only her friends who are black women looking for her.
Mm.
Right? Like that to me wasn't done as a coincidence. I think it was very intentional to show how even with all of the turmoil, with all of the issues that they have with her sort of individually and her as a part of their collective, all of that shit went out of the window, right? Like even when you go to the scene at the house, right, there's some other woman there.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's from Derek's mom and sister.
Okay, black women. Mm-hmm. You know, I can get up and go. I also don't think it was lost on me that Derek didn't have any of his friends there. That there were no black men outside of him actively looking for her, and almost like, you know, because, you know, look, obviously this is her going through this, right? But he's a part of that story.
Yeah.
Like, his wife is gone. He's genuinely like kind of fucked up here.
Yeah.
And he doesn't call anyone, dude. Like he doesn't, there's no one there comforting, figuring this out. There's no hub of men saying, yo, all right, bro, where we going?
Yeah, what are we doing?
You point me in the direction.
I cannot see Chad and Lawrence in that scene, for sure.
You said you thought you would see them.
I was surprised that they weren't in the last episode. For sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't kind of thought about it from that angle, but that does, not you say it, I kind of see it. And it's also interesting that another subtle thing that you just triggered me thinking about by saying that is, if you notice that all the people that they were kind of going to ask, people in the hotel and blah, 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 they were kind of like, I might have seen her, I might not. It wasn't no stress for them. It was like, like, in other words, like, it's a black woman, I'm not that pressed. Like, kind of helped out a little bit, you know, like, oh, I saw her having some drinks or whatever. But it was the one guy, even, you know, he did show them the video. So they did get some help. But it wasn't, I don't think, the sense of urgency it would have been if it was like a blonde white woman. It would have been like all point bulletin kind of shit, you know?
Maybe it was just a really subtle way for them to say, like, black women, we all we got. Which is illustrated this week.
Yes, I think that it was intentionally done that way. I think the whole finding Latoya sort of under cast. See, I've been watching, bro. You talk about how I've been watching.
You watch a couple episodes.
I watched like four episodes.
Honestly, that's more than I thought. Yeah. So let's dig into let's dig into Lawrence and Issa. So Lawrence finds out that he does get this job up in San Francisco. That was kind of like an underlying plot line for maybe like the last three episodes that he had went up to Frisco. He had interviewed, he didn't, cause he wasn't happy where he was working at the tech company he was working at the time, and he got the gig. So he comes back and, you know, him and Issa meet up at a fair, outside fair. He tells her he gets the gig and she's very, very happy, willing to possibly move to Frisco, doesn't want to let go of the relationship. But it felt like to me that Lawrence kind of was like, when she said that she was willing to move, I didn't feel like he was really like that happy about it. He was kind of like, oh, okay, you're going to come with me.
He was shocked.
Oh, he was more shocked? Okay. All right, I'll take that. I'll take that from the woman's side. and so he, they have a whole thing, and then come find out that Condola, who has been trying to get in touch with him and talk to him, maybe for the past three episodes, it's been kind of like he's like, no, remember when they went out and she kept calling?
Right. He said that we talked and we ended it at the beginning of the episode.
I question the veracity of that. I do. Maybe he did. I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm not sure. But anyway, comes find out that he has to break to Issa later in the episode that Condola is pregnant and she's keeping it. So Inka's rubbing her eyes right now, rubbing her face. She's got some things to say. So what do you think about that?
I feel like as a person who accidentally got pregnant at 34, I get it. I get keeping the baby and not caring. I don't get, maybe I just hate that the writers put it in there. I get her keeping the baby. I think it's disingenuous for her to be like, you can be as involved as you want to be. Like, we know Lawrence is a good guy. Like, he's not a piece of shit. He's not going to have his kid out here, you know, with just a mom. Like, that's never going to be part of the equation for Lawrence. So I think that was a bit like, all right, okay, girl.
You just don't like her. So, you can't stand her. You can't stand her. I wasn't surprised that she was pregnant. I don't know. And I definitely wasn't surprised she was
pregnant.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised she was keeping it because, you know, like you said, at that age, you know, I'm assuming her character's in her mid-30s, like the way most of them are. And she seems to be doing, you know, decent, you know, pretty well professionally. So
they alluded to her having had an abortion before, too.
Yeah, from her husband.
Yeah.
So she's divorced now. So,
And apparently the husband, like, that wasn't some amicable split. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So, you know, there's a huge range of emotion there. I thought that those scenes were shot really well.
When they were going back and forth like that?
Yeah, they seemed very realistic. I saw people, like, getting on Lawrence about asking the question of, like, kind of why would you want to keep it? And I was like, yo, like, guys, like, that's a fair question in the mix of that context, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's being hit with, like, nigga, you're about to be a father. He thought, I'm about to get this job. I'm back with Issa. It's popping. Yeah. Nigga, it's we good. Yeah. And boom, nigga, you a daddy?
You're a daddy, like, from a chick you don't want to be with.
Forever.
Yeah, like, and what was crazy was, like, you know, I mean, listen, this is a part of having sex, right? Like, you can be as careful as you think you're being, and there's still those off. Hey, nigga, the game is the game.
Exactly.
You know, and so I didn't think that question was callous. I didn't think that question. Well, I felt like that question was him sort of saying, not why would you want to keep a baby, but why would you want to keep a baby in with this nucleus?
Our
situation is not conducive for you having, for us to be together, right? Like, we know there's no shot here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he was crying out to Jesus, like, "Why?"
Yes.
And in the same episode, Molly breaks up with Andrew. Well, Andrew breaks up with Molly.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, "Hold on,
Andrew,
now, boy."
Andrew broke up with Molly, and I think they broke up. I think that. I mean, I'm not saying they won't ever get back together, but that Andrew's definitely at the end of his rope.
Andrew's been done. He was holding.
Like three episodes. He's been holding on for three episodes. Yeah, exactly. Three, four episodes.
Like, let me Andrew was done in the pool. In.
Yeah, he's thinking maybe she'll change, maybe she'll change, maybe she'll change. And, you know,
What I loved about that storyline?
No, go ahead.
What I loved about that storyline was that's dating.
Yes.
Right? Like actually recognizing, like, this is never gonna work, right? Like, because our personalities are clashing so much.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. And you know, look, as much as I hate Molly, right? Like, she deserves somebody, right? Yeah. Who understands and would appreciate her ebbs and flows because she has them, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying. And Andrew deserves somebody that's gonna be, you know, happy go lucky. If we meet up, we meet up. If we don't, we don't.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Molly hate out here too. And I don't hate Molly the way a lot of people do, because I think on both sides, men and women, a lot of people are her. But I think a lot of people don't quite recognize, that they are her. Like, kind of, you know, self-sabotaging, you know, rigid, kind of selfish, like, I don't think a lot of people kind of own the fact that they are her. So it's easy for people to kind of point fingers and be like, oh, Molly's trash. But it's like, yeah, you kind of Molly too, P.D. Like, you kind of done a lot of the same shit, you know? So I appreciate that short. I appreciated that storyline. And you're right, it is dating. And it's hard because I saw somebody write this online, which is interesting, because in that situation, it wasn't like, you know, Andrew cheated or Molly cheated. And nobody did anything like particularly heinous. They just weren't messing.
I don't think either of them did anything wrong. Not even heinous, right? Exactly. Like, they just, you know, this is just not a clash that's gonna, you know, listen, the only chemistry being in the bedroom is not enough to sustain a relationship.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. Yeah. So
I do think that Molly really tried and she really did love him. She just lacks the self-awareness to really give herself to somebody fully.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you think about that? The last scene with them getting back together?
I mean, we knew it was going to happen. As soon as we saw that she was going to Mercado, I was like, oh, here we go.
Back to square one kind of thing.
I'm kind of glad that we didn't get to hear the conversation too, because no matter who said what, it would have been further polarizing. Nobody would have liked it. So I think it's best that they left it open.
But I got the, again, I, you know, we'll never know, but I got the vibe that the conversation, maybe there was some conversation about their relationship, but I think they both really needed to talk to each other about what they've been going through. Neither one of them had that person. If they could be like, this happened with Andrew, or this happened with Nathan, or this happened with, you know, Lawrence. And
you need your real friend in order to bear your soul and give the full story.
Yes.
You know, Molly's never going to give that full story to anyone other than, you know, Issa exactly. in that setting. And Issa's never going to give the full story about her shit, you know, with Lawrence, you know, to anyone else.
Yeah, because yeah, they're not going to judge each other. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're just going to listen and give advice, but it's not going to be like, bitch, you're crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to be none of that.
Yeah, Kelly and Tiffany got their own shit going on anyway.
Yeah, so. One thing I do hope that whenever the next season comes, I do hope they start to flesh out Kelly a little more. Like, I love her humor. I don't know. You don't think so?
She's getting her own show on another network somewhere.
Oh, is she?
Even less of her than we see now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh. I think it's like Comedy Central or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she's a very talented and I believe sought after writer.
Mm-hmm.
So she's probably creating content. You know, I'm sure she has production partners. And, you know, because her appearance, I mean, listen, she could still remain on the show and function in a whole other capacity. They can figure out that carve out. I highly doubt that this series goes beyond. If it goes beyond season five, I bet the money in my pocket it doesn't go past six.
Okay,
this isn't going to be like
number for HBO though. They usually stop things at six seasons.
Yes. Well, they stopped. Boardwalk Empire stopped at five.
Okay.
The Wire
was also five.
Yes. So normally what happens is that's kind like you said, that's kind of HBO's thing, but that's kind of a lot of these shows. That's why, you know, Power, because at some point, you know, it's a stale story, right?
Yeah,
like it's not
yeah.
as evolving. You know, this is why in sitcoms by season four, you get the precocious kid.
Yeah,
because the precocious, like yes, the Raven Simone, you get Sam on different strokes, you know, because you know it's boring now.
That nigga brought Sam back.
Remember Sam?
I remember Sam. Nigga, I would have purchased that penny. I would have said penny on good times. This nigga went to Sam.
Hey, yo, man, my nigga Sam, baby, Mr. Drummond needed some action, bro. He tired of being in that cold bed.
This nigga says Sam. Wow. Okay. real quick, did either one of y'all anybody see the Yvonne Orji special, the comedy special?
I did. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I like how they.
Y'all weren't gonna tell me y'all were done talking about Insecurity.
We literally just finished. Like literally.
Nice.
Did you see the Yvonne Orji special, Nye?
The Dave Chappelle special?
Yvonne Orji. Her comedy.
No. Oh, Yvonne. No, I didn't see it. I thought you were saying Lionel Richie. I was like, why did Lionel Richie have a comedy special? Oh no, Yvonne's comedy special. No.
Yeah. Lionel Richie. Did you see it? You see it, bro?
No, I'm good. God bless.
Okay. I heard it was good, but there might be a disconnect. I heard. I did not watch it. This is not my opinion. I'm not offering this as my opinion. What I've heard as feedback was that there might be a disconnect if you either do not know a lot of or spend a lot of time around Nigerians.
Yeah, her comedy is definitely based on her.
It's not for us. It's from her perspective, as it should
yeah.
be, right?
So. Yeah, it's her comedy is based on her being raised by Nigerian parents in America and, you know, their cultural, not necessarily cultural difference, a little bit of the cultural difference between American, Black Americans and Nigerians, but mostly just about Nigerian culture, period. And then it was interspersed with her being in Nigeria, in Lagos. I guess her parents have moved back there since. I don't think she's raised in the DMV, but I think they moved back to Lagos full time now. So she goes back there and she's like with her mother and her father and her brother and some uncles and stuff and walking around Lagos and kind of, you know, cracking some jokes and like, you know, talking to people. But then at the end, I didn't get like, you know, super serious, but the last scene in Lagos, she kind of talked about, you know, how she made it. She's kind of made that, so hence the
Mama
title,
made it.
The title of the special, because she's like, I remember when I was just dead broke and I was, you know, I just wanted to tell my mother I made it, so I made the special. That, so I thought it was good. Like I said, it was definitely kind of, you know, very, very, you know, if you grew up in like, you know, probably like Kentucky or like, you know, St. Louis, and there's not a lot of Nigerian people around, you're probably gonna be like, what? You know, but you know, right. But some of the other areas, you know, like New York or Atlanta, DC or whatever, where there's like a Houston, with a huge Nigerian population, you get it a little more. But again,
if you know some inside Nigeria. I'm sorry, what did you say, Inka?
I think it was still enjoyable, though.
I liked it.
They gave enough background where you can understand what's happening.
Yeah, I liked it.
It kind of made me think, some of the commentary I heard kind of made me think of, like, when I still lived in South Carolina, there would be some comics on Def Comedy Jam who would, like, there was this one comic who did a whole thing about how Haitians and Jamaicans argue. That I just didn't get, but everybody else was dying laughing. And then after I lived in New York for a while, I remember thinking of that joke and being like, oh, now
you understand.
I understand. Yeah, that kind of.
Yeah. Now, one more thing. Did have y'all started watching the I May Destroy You?
With Michael O'Connell?
Yeah.
I started it one day and stopped. So Inka's here for that too. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Okay, Inka, we're going to have you on.
Just come on for the TV commentary because I done fell off all the new shows.
Yes, yeah. We're going to have you come on.
I've been quarantined since March 10th, my daughter. So I'll be watching the show.
So, like we talked about a little bit last week, but I Made the Story is a show by Michaela Cole, London. I think she's Ghanaian. Actually, I think she's Ghanaian. I think she's Nigerian. Born actress.
I think she might be West African.
Actress / I don't say comedian. Kind of like I hate to be so shallow with it, but she's kind of like the UK Issa Rae. Like they're very kind of similar.
Ish,
in that.
They're
not comedians, but they have a lot of comedy in their shit.
Yeah.
And they're kind of both quirky in different ways. You know what I'm saying? But this I May Destroy You show, I love this show. I still don't quite know what's going on.
It's also based or came, I don't want to say based on, that might be the wrong word, but it came from an experience. So Michaela fell off the radar for a minute and nobody
after chewing gum.
After the second season of chewing gum and she was on Black Mirror and all sort of stuff. And nobody really knew what happened for a minute. And she came back and she talked about how she had been assaulted. And this series comes at least in part from
her experience. Yeah, somebody spiked her drink somewhere and she was sexually assaulted and the same
in real life. If I think it happened on a flight, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And in this series, her character, well, I'm damn blanking on her character's name now, but gets her drink spiked on a night out with her friend, and she's the rest of the series is kind of like her, kind of like flashing back and having like these little quick blasts of memory, but she can't put it together. And then I think as it's going to go on, it feels like the memories, the flashbacks will kind of get like a little longer and a little longer and kind of start to be more cohesive. But right now we're only on episode 2. So we still like don't know what's quite going on. And there's still characters being introduced. Like her best friend was introduced this week, the girl T. She has a gay friend too. She has a roommate, the white cat. I think something will kind of, and something kind of happens each episode was kind of see her relationship and relationship to these other people. But Inka, since you're the guest, like you tell me, like, what do you think about the show so far?
I like that it's a little bit all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pin down exactly who she is and exactly, I don't know if she's, I hate to use the term crazy, but like, is she crazy all the time or has this event made her crazy? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's part of the show. Like, and I think the for lack of a better term, craziness, all over the placeness is actually kind of slick because they're doing it through her eyes because she's all over the place because she doesn't remember what happened. So she's like, I don't know, like, wait a minute, did I take money out the bank? And how the hell did I get way over there to take the money out the bank? Like, that's way far from where we were. And, like, I can't remember. Like, you get that energy when you watch it. You don't really quite know what the fuck is going on and who did what.
I didn't quite get it in the first episode just because London is one of those cities that, like, all the streets look exactly the same.
Mm.
Don't know, like, she's asking, like, how do I get back to whatever street she lived on? It made sense for me because, like, I've been lost in that city before.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, shit, even being in New York, if you were in the wrong part, if you were in a part of the city you're unfamiliar with, I could get lost on Lower East Side, easy.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
without yeah. Google Maps, I don't know where the hell I'm going. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, you'd be way down in the middle of nowhere.
I don't do New York City well. No.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoy that show, and I'm looking forward, like, I just feel like by episode, like, 8 or 9, we're going to be on some, like, yo! It's going to blow our mind what actually is, you know, when it comes together, what actually happened that night.
Is she the writer?
She's a writer. She's a writer. So, apparently, I guess she was either wrote or was on some type of, maybe her blog or something kind of blew up, because she gets recognized on the street. But she doesn't really have much money because she still got a roommate. You know, their apartment is, like, not really fly compared to her boy's crib, the banker. His shit is fly. So I feel like this book that she got, a book deal, and this book deal is probably going to be the thing that's going to set her to the quote-unquote next level. But in the process of that, exactly, because she had the drugs and stuff. So I really like that show. I really like it a lot, you know.
So, I like it.
Before you go, just tell us a little more. Before you go, tell us a little more about what's going on with you.
Or you can stay. We're not rushing you.
I know she got Ivy, so I don't know if she got to go make dinner. So if you
I do
stay,
not want you to feel like you got
to. Yeah, no, I'm not rushing her. I was just trying to. I was being considerate, but trust me, you could. You know, stay on. Let's keep going. You want to go? Keep going.
Yeah, I'm in.
All right, cool. Tell us what's going on with you anyway.
Shit. I live from country, and I'm just trying to watch my back. And I pass 7 or 8 Trump flags on the way to the grocery store, like 2 miles away. So
damn,
I'm just trying to keep my head down, keep out of
people. Can you feel that tension now more than before?
Oh yeah. Besides having to wear a mask everywhere, there's this thing where nobody's looking me in the eyes anymore. Which is crazy.
And mind you, not that it should matter, but Inka is a veteran and her husband is active military. So even, and I imagine this is a town where there's a lot of active military. So even in a military town where the assumption probably is that they are military.
Or affiliated still, some kind
they are
of way.
Affiliated, yeah. This is still the thing.
They still don't want us here.
Yeah.
It's, especially after the Ahmaud Arbery murder happened. Travis runs outside every single day. Like, damn. So for us to be up here and be so remote, like, that is the longest 45 minutes of my day is waiting for him to come back in from the runs. Like, it is very real up here.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Or not, like.
Wow. Wow.
It's a tough space to be in.
It is.
I'm very happy that we have, like, a decent-sized house so nobody's on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And put Ivy out in the front yard with the water hose, and she thinks she's in Disneyland. So
that's awesome.
I'm good.
Well, okay. Well, let's keep going. So next topic, Dave Chappelle. So he dropped a special out the sky called 8:46, which is the time that Derek Chauvin kneeled on George Floyd's neck. It's not really a comedy show. It's actually not a comedy show at all. It's more kind of like
commentary.
Yes, it's kind of Dave just kind of trying to get his thoughts out and together. He's almost just rambling at certain points because he's got a notebook on stage, so he wrote down some things, but he's just kind of like trying to process. That's what it's called. He's trying to process what happened to George Floyd and what's happened in general, especially in the last, I guess, year or two. And he's angry. He's very angry about, as you know, all most black people are, except for, you know, a few goofballs, about what's been going on. What'd y'all think about it?
I watched half of it, and then I had to pause because I wanted to be in the... So, for clarity, for listeners who keep being like, Naima said she didn't watch, she didn't do... I've had, like, a crazy-ass back-to-back last couple of weeks, so almost every minute I'm on a Zoom call, I gotta do something for somebody, I gotta prepare something, so when I do have downtime, I'm watching completely mindless shit, and I wanted to watch the Dave special and process it, not just because I wanted to absorb the poignant points, but because there is also criticism of the fact that he doesn't say anything about the black women who have been killed. So I started it, and then I think I had to get on a call or something, and I never came back to it, but the first part that I saw, in addition to the clips that were floating around the net, were very, very poignant, but I want to watch it in its entirety and observe
it. Did you watch it, bro?
Yeah, I did. I watched it. I thought it was, I mean, good is not really a great word to use, but it's probably the only word I can use right now. I thought it was a good commentary. I understand the criticism about not mentioning black women. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things we have to, no, we don't have to do anything. But one of the things I think has been incredibly striking about the Ahmaud and the George case was that it was completely captured on video, and we were kind of inundated with that shock. And we didn't see Breonna Taylor, and we didn't see, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the young woman's name in Baltimore that was shot with her kid, or I think she was in Maryland.
Almost
none of the women get captured, because a lot of them are actually in their house when the shit happens.
Yes, well, yeah. They're in their house, they're in these sort of secluded, sort of non, it's almost as if the confrontation had already taken place, and then, you know, they catch that wrath later on. But listen, I think what Dave said was spot on when he said, like, the streets are talking. They didn't need me to speak for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was, and this is what makes his ability to sort of do these shows, air quotes, special. Because I don't think another person would have been able to completely articulate that in the same sort of way, yeah, and really have enough wherewithal to be as noticeable a star and as conscious of that this isn't about me.
Yeah, put their ego to the side and say, you don't need me, instead of I need to say something.
You know? If you peep in the beginning of the special, he says, y'all young people are driving this car. Like, y'all got this. I feel safe with y'all.
I'm good.
Yes, yeah. I'm good. I'm good sitting in the back. Like, we got to remember, like, Dave is no spring chicken, man.
Yeah.
Dave 50 years old, bro.
Yeah.
That saying goes, man, you know, young men are for war, old men are for counsel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a reason that saying exists.
Yeah, because it's real.
Yes, and so I'm glad he mentioned that shit about Don Lemon. I'm glad he, you know, blasted him. And really, I think, I don't even think it was Don Lemon. Clearly it was Don Lemon, but I think the idea of looking for people to come on your show to talk about this
Dave especially, like, Dave is the one. It, which is amazing, because it was even before Firefest, but before Firefest, but, you know, Dave had the joke, like, what does Ja Rule think about this right now?
And that's kind of become,
he said it again. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that it's kind of become the go-to, at least that I've noticed recently, is, you know, when people are like, where are the celebrities? Like, people are like, nobody gives a fuck what Ja Rule think, you know, like, literally, yeah. nobody cares. I think for me, and I want to keep this in mind when I watch it, and it's the same thing as with the last one. What the criticism to what Dave said, I think I don't think it's an either or thing. I think it's a both and thing. And, you know, right now we don't really do well with both and conversations. And I think especially after the murder of Toyin, Alua Toyin, I got to go find her last name, because I'm going to
the young activist,
yeah, yeah, who was
19-year-old girl,
the 19-year-old young mm-hmm. activist who was murdered in Tallahassee when he was found early. But say it again, Inka.
Falau?
Oh yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Who was murdered last week in Tallahassee? You know, there has long been a discussion of, you know, with Breonna Taylor and, like we said, with the other women who've been killed, who there was no video to resonate with you the same way, or the fact that, like, women's names, you know, when you say their names, a lot of times it's men and people forget the women. So there has been a separate, like, call to action to remember the women's names when you're mm-hmm. also telling these stories. Almost like when you said it was like almost like the conflict had already happened and they caught the aftermath. The flip side of that is people saying, like, they were even more innocent because they didn't even do shit. They were home. Like, the fuck? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't do shit. So, I think that, but I think it's a both and, because men get defensive and say, like, oh, so what, y'all are going to abandon us? Y'all are going to stop rooting for us? Y'all are going to do whatever? And nobody is saying that. Like, obviously, none of us are going to do that. But I think it is a, we're going to stand up for you because you represent all of us. But also, we want to make sure that we're included in that as well, yeah. Right? Like, we want to make sure that you guys are thinking of us as well. We want to make sure that we're protected as well. But, like, as soon as it comes up, the same thing with the date thing, there's a defense instead of a real conversation about it. So I think that Dave's piece, and again, I'm talking shit because I haven't watched it yet, but so many people that I know have said good things about it. I think Dave's piece can be powerful in what it was and can be important. And also that Dave has a bit of a blind spot when it comes to how he talks about sexuality and gender still.
I don't even think Dave would disagree with that point.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing. I don't think he would, you know, I think it's fairly clear. If he objectively looked at this, there's really not an argument to be made.
Yeah. I think, I mean, not that it makes it better, but I don't think that it was, I don't think it was conscious. I think he was just.
But that's the point.
It wasn't conscious, that it doesn't come to mind.
It doesn't resonate.
So many people. Yeah, that it doesn't resonate, that it's not top of mind, that you actually have to pause
and think
and
about
be
it.
Reminded or think about it. Like, people brought that up, like, a few people were really turned off by this, but one of the kind of one left moments with Kirk and Fred was when they said the names of all the people who had been killed, and they had to come back later because they had not said any women's names.
Yeah.
And even then they said like two, you know what I mean? And it, so I think it is key I'm trying to be more mindful about this for myself in terms of how it reflects my advocacy for our trans brothers and sisters. But it's like, the same allyship that we're demanding of white people, if we're not able to reflect that internally to each other, then this shit is all fucked up. Because we do all reflect systems of patriarchy and sexism and bias, even within our own community. So we can do both at the same time. We can demand allyship from outside of our community and also reflect on how we're really banding together to lift each other up inside. I don't know how we get past like the arguments to have conversations. I guess that's the problem.
You might not ever get past them. But yeah. as long as we have the conversations, I think that's what's important. I don't think it's ever going to be like, oh, well, that's done. I mean, it's always going to be something else to kind of discuss.
Right.
I want to mention, obviously, Rashard Brooks, who was killed in Atlanta. God, I'm tired of having people killed conversations every week, but was killed in Atlanta at a Wendy's, I guess less than a week ago. It was last weekend. It was Saturday night and Sunday morning. He had a birthday party for one of his children. I guess him and his girl kind of got into it. He was drinking at the party. You know, they got into it. He jumped in the car. He drove to the Wendy's, which was in the neighborhood, fell asleep in the car because he was drinking. Apparently, I was misled because apparently he fell asleep in the car, but he wasn't blocking the drive-through. His car was in the parking lot, but he wasn't, like, I thought he was blocking the drive-through. Like, he was in the drive-through and he fell asleep, but that wasn't the case. His car, it was noticeable that he wasn't in a parking space, but he wasn't blocking cars. So the cops were called because he was in the parking lot sleeping. He gets out the car. If you watch the full video, which a lot of people don't understand, is like, this whole process took almost an hour. Like, it wasn't like he got in the car, they started fighting. Like, one
cop... Because also he was trying to rationalize with
them. Yeah, because first one cop came. And that's the beginning. And they're literally talking. They're having a conversation. And he's like, yeah, I got in with my girl, man. My sister live up the block, man. I might just walk up there. Like, they're talking. And then the second cop, who basically is like a Derek Chauvin clone, now you can find out, now he's got like 12 you know, 12 complaints against him for excessive force. He comes up, and then, you know, that's when it starts to escalate. And then they decide that they're going to arrest him. And it shows, obviously, the difference between black and white, because there's 100 videos of white people attacking cops and not getting killed. And first of all, Rayshard offered to walk to his sister's house, who lived like less than a mile.
Yeah, he was like, I'm just going down the road. Just let me walk down the road.
They could have let him walk to his sister's. They could have told the boy to call an Uber or a Lyft. They could have just, and you know, we're going to tow your car, bro. You know, because we're going to get
locked.
They could have took him to his sister. There's 100 things they could have did. But what happened was, in my opinion, is once they started to try to arrest him, Rayshard was pretty strong. And he started to tussle. And they tried to tase him a couple of times. That didn't slow him down. And I feel like the cop who killed him was embarrassed, because if you look at the footage, the parking lot is full because, like, you know, it's a Saturday night into Sunday. People are going
to let out
from the club or whatever. Yeah, they go. So, like, this car is in. The one thing about this case, they're going to have like 40 witnesses, because this car is like watching this whole thing unfold.
But I also think that's important to note, because even in the midst of rising, even in the midst of
everything,
a spotlight on police officers and police violence, even in the midst of it being a crowded area and it being a ton of witnesses, this officer shot this man twice in the fucking back and then went over and kicked him and like stood on top of him.
And for what? Because he was drunk and he was
fucking
in a Wendy's parking lot. Yeah.
And for the people, and I'm going to assume that this is none of our listeners, who, not even with Rashad Brooks, but with other non-perfect victims who try to be like, well, they did steal something.
Oh, I saw a lot of those conversations.
They did. Yeah, or he was actually, don't detract away from actual police brutality. Nothing Rashad Brooks did.
Man, he should die.
Merited death. A ticket. And that's a night in the drunk tank.
Honestly,
right? They
could have let him run. Like, they had his ID.
He also left his car. Like, he was running away from them. Like, nothing. But even in all of that, even if he grabbed the taser, which is non-fatal, even if he punched the cop, nothing he did merited being fucking shot. Like, nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they charged the officer today, just a couple of hours ago. But, like, nothing. I don't give a fuck. Like, even if, like, going even back to George Floyd, even if George Floyd had passed the counterfeit $20 bill, he did not deserve to die. Motherfuckers still deserve due fucking process. And if you're arguing that somebody dying at the hands of police for what would be a misdemeanor, even for what would be a felony, fuck it. Even for what would be a felony, if the police officer was not an imminent threat, not fake threat, like, or not as I would fear for my life because he's a big nigga. If the police officer is not an imminent threat, if there was not a weapon drawn on him, not a weapon on the person, but a weapon drawn on the cop, if you're arguing that they were justified in killing somebody, you're part of the problem, because that level of police escalation is so normalized to you that you actually think this shit is okay. This is not how it's supposed to happen.
And also with tasers, you know, once you fire a taser,
that's it.
You have to reset it. Yeah. So him pointing the taser, it's like, dude, he had already fired the taser at him. He couldn't shoot back.
Right.
Rayshard didn't know that. But like, like, y'all know that it wasn't nothing coming out that gun. What do you think, Inka and Sean? What do y'all think about it?
I'm tired of cops being bitch ass niggas. Like, you can't square up with somebody. You can't run 15 steps, like, to a drunk person to get.
They ain't never had no fights.
I didn't watch the video. I'm not going to watch the video. I can't keep watching these things. It's really
It's traumatizing.
Yeah, so I didn't watch the video. This to me was just, you know, kind of to what Nas said, which was, with everything going on in the world, like, we still have this incident. Like, at the peak of consciousness of police brutality. And so what it says to me, and what I've been feeling for a very long time, is that they have been trained to do this.
Yes.
They have been trained, and they have been given the green light. They have been able to operate with impunity. They have very powerful unions that provide high price attorneys. They have district attorneys that are in their pockets. They have the ability to ask for judge trials versus jury mm-hmm. trials. Mm-hmm. We know that judges are more likely to side with a police officer in any case. So, not to go off on a tangent, but the part of the defunding the police is really about trying to, you know, basically cripple the structure in which they're operating. You know what I'm saying? Like, at least that's what I take it as. And I think that that's right. going to be very important. I'm tired of hearing, leaders and folks. I'm using leaders very loosely here. But folks with this whole, it's going to take time shit. Like, dude, I could go to YouTube right now and punch in a clip from, like, 1982. I could punch in a clip from fucking 1955. In 1968, and it's the same. It's literally the same story. It's the same story, because as long as they're able to say or give the impression that they are in fear for their life, this hero porn and the fawning over police officers and all of this fucking gratitude and platitude that we're paying to these motherfuckers who by and large don't do a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, most of what police officers actually do is like ticketing and low level
bullshit. Now this is no disrespect, because it's a gig, and I'm not saying but like what we're not gonna do is like, you motherfuckers ain't doing Die Hard every weekend, okay?
Yeah.
Let's cut the shit. Yeah. The majority of you guys never even fire your office your issued weapon.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have
You ain't dealing with that type of shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, and actually, the leading cause of police deaths are accidents.
Mm.
Them speeding.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? High speed chases and shit like that. But, the Atlanta Police Department chief resigns. And this is why the kneeling and the marching with folks and all of that is
doing a wobble
because
doing a wobble and shit.
Yeah. Like,
cha-cha slide.
Yeah. You're not you guess what? You are definitely not your ancestors, nigga. Cause Miss Irma was not wobbling with Bull Connor, my nigga.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Told by they can come to the cookout.
Yeah. No. Nah. So she does all of that. But my point was, all of that solidarity goes out of the window when you resign, when it is now time for you to be accountable. Yep. This is the time for you to show leadership. This is the time for you to use your power, to use your voice, to enact change. And instead of using that power and that voice to enact change, you go and you hide, okay? And the mayor, I'm sure, pressed her to resign.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And the game is the game. Listen, she wears a white shirt. I'm sure she's pinching.
She's fine.
She's not missing any meals.
Mm-hmm. She's fine. Speaking of that, wait, say it again.
I said, like Sean said, she will not be 4-12 at the Target.
Exactly.
Right.
She ain't gonna be stocking those shelves and shit.
Yeah, she ain't wearing nice security, my nigga.
We got a new tide in here. Go on with these Tide Pods. Get them on over here. Speaking of that, did y'all see the clip today of Officer, they calling her Officer Karen?
Oh my God, this bitch here. Can I talk about this, please?
Stacy, her name was Stacy. Her actual name was Stacy.
Stacy need to get it the fuck together. So Stacy apparently got off her third shift job. She still had a uniform, but it was almost like not a plain clothes, but like a casual uniform. It was like she had on a polo shirt, it looked like, not like an actual dress uniform.
Yeah.
But she had like her walkie on her. So she looked like some kind of officer. Mm. So she was talking about how she went through McDonald's for breakfast and got an egg McMuffin combo. And she had paid in advance because she doesn't want people to pay for it because she's the police. She doesn't want any special favors. So she goes through the first window and gets a receipt. And the way she tells it, I'm going to try to tell it like she told it, because she made it sound like it was so fucking nefarious and whatever.
Yeah, like it was so crazy.
She goes to the second window, and the woman asks her for her order again. So she gives her order again. And she waits. And she waits. This is how she told it. And she's waiting. And the woman comes and asks her to pull up to wait for her food. So she pulls up. And she's waiting. And at this point, her voice starts to shake. And she tells her. And then an employee comes out with her coffee. But just the coffee. And gives her her coffee. And at that point, she had been waiting so long. And she's so nervous that she told him that she couldn't even take the food. She didn't even want to worry about the food. Don't even worry about the food. She couldn't even take the food. And that's when I had to turn the bullshit off. Because, bitch, why are you crying about going through McDonald's during the breakfast rush and having to wait for your fucking Egg McMuffin?
And as though
it were like somehow worrisome that they actually tried to give you a modicum of customer service by bringing you your coffee, so you didn't have to wait for that.
Yes,
and she's like, it doesn't matter what I've done. It doesn't matter how hard I've
worked. She's like, it's been so hard.
It's hungry.
If you see a cop, just be nice to us, because we've been through a lot of these
And nobody people. Has not been nice to you. It's like, first of all, like nobody 20. Did anything. Literally, nobody.
Black people are dead
did.
In the street. Black people dead in the street.
Not only are black people dead in the street, but my when I reposted, I said, so you see how something as simple as being told to wait on her food and like kind of being isolated is causing her anxiety and making her wonder if she's being profiled. That's black people. Everything we do every fucking day. Like, you'll be okay. Because guess what? This is how we feel. Every time anybody does anything out of routine where we're concerned,
you'll be like, what's
we're
good?
We're like, it's because I'm black. You want something? What you doing? What's happening? So, welcome, bitch, Stacy. Welcome to anxiety just for fucking being who the fuck you are. But you can go home and take your uniform off and go back to McDonald's and get your food and it's all up. We can't take the black off. And also, like, I'm pretty sure that it was just the fact that your Egg McMuffin was not
That's
ready.
That's what it was.
They don't keep Egg McMuffins stacked like they do the regular biscuits.
Yeah, they make
like, it's
shit.
The breakfast rush at McDonald's. Like, they pull. You know how many times I've had to pull up and eat my food? Like, it's this shit is not. She had to, like, they threw the coffee at her or something. There was nothing about anybody having a tone with her,
nothing.
Anybody saying anything to her, anybody shading her. It was just her being fucking
what I found really interesting, not surprising, but really interesting was, so I went to her original post and watched the fuckery, and then went down under the comments, and it was like literally right down the middle, like pretty much most white people were like, why, she's a good person, and why would they do that to her, and yeah, it's not right, and we don't know what's going to happen. And anybody else was like, yo, like we're saying, what we're saying, like, yo, she's fucking bugging, like, and honestly, if you can't handle this, you definitely don't need to have a gun.
Because definitely need to turn your shit in.
You're going
to
run and shoot somebody because they sneezed or something. You know,
because your scary ass can't handle the fucking
exactly.
gun.
It was cut like
why
right
are all y'all scary
the...
motherfuckers police? Why? Why did you do that? Why would you do that?
Because it's an incredibly easy job in terms of getting access to.
Fair.
It's not a lot of requirements. There's really not a lot required. Now, listen, there are obvious requirements as you move up in rank and things of that nature. But yes, there's not a lot of requirement for rank and file police officers. You basically, if you are 21, 22 years old, okay, and you've been loafing around, and you ain't done shit for a minute, okay, and
and no disrespect, Inca, but maybe just like a couple years in the service, but just like a one quick run. One tour. Like you did like a little quick, like 2 years or whatever,
you were a private,
and you got out, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you got your Camaro, you signed off.
Yeah, you got your Dodge Charger.
But what happens is like what we see. So we're trained as a society, right, to really look at, we look at cops with this awe, and like they have like this incredible difficult job, but by and large, rank and file police officers, it's not a very difficult job to qualify for. Right. I've qualified. I've gone to the interview.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I qualified for a firefighter.
Yeah.
It is harder to be a firefighter. Yeah. Absolutely. I know people who've tried to be firefighters a bunch of times and haven't made it. And in New York, I think...
Well, firefighters are much more physical.
Yeah. I think for NYPD, you also have to have a certain amount of college credits, but you don't actually have to.
It's an associate's degree, I believe.
Like 12 credits or something like that.
I'm not even 100% sure. I'm not even 100% sure that they still even do that right now.
Right.
Because, and listen, you know, God bless, but you could go get that. You know, you go to Phoenix online, you go down to
Bed-Rye. Yeah, I have a friend whose husband did online. I mean, the reality is, and because I was thinking about this, I have friends. I have friends who are cops, and I have a great respect for those who are beat cops and those who are interacting with people and who really are putting themselves in danger and or sacrificing like crazy hours, whatever. But I also know a lot of people who did that shit because they could get in, do their 20 and get out, and they had a union job.
Yeah, and have
that's
a
it. That's
I know a lot of people who did that shit.
And you get to carry a gun. You go into your second career at like fucking 50 years old.
Exactly.
Yeah. You get on that. You get on that. Listen, you get on that 20. 25. You put in 25. You 50. You've got a stellar record. You got a license to carry. You've got access to databases. You can go to any private security firm.
Yep.
You can go to any private company and get you a sweet moonlighting gig at like $50 an hour.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe you drive around some CEO or some shit like that.
Don't they got lifetime medical too?
Yeah, they got lifetime medical. You still got your pension. Yeah,
that's
like you. What you think? Yeah, what you think the $6 billion is for?
Real talk. That shit was kind of bonkers. I want to mention Aunt Jemima.
I was about to say we got to talk about Aunt Jemima.
So Aunt Jemima is getting rebranded. I don't know what the new package is going to look like, but I guess
after
131 years. Quaker Oats is realizing that Aunt Jemima's racist. Oh my God!
It's not just the package; they're changing
and the name.
They've changed the package. Aunt Jemima has gotten several updates over the years. The last of which was 89. I think there might have been one other one like that. Because when I was coming up, she looked like she did now in the face, but she still had a handkerchief. I'm not even gonna say headscarf because it's tied
in a slave. She looked like a slave.
Except she had on fashion fair makeup. She like a slave with some fashion fair makeup on. But they had gotten rid of like the big round Mamie face and given her a slimmer face.
Slimmed it down some.
Giving her some makeup, but she still had on
a headscarf. Some Botox and shit.
Right. So Aunt Jemima has finally given in to Quaker Oats and said, okay, we're going to get rid of the name. We're going to rebrand. And apparently,
it's an uproar.
I ain't using Aunt Jemima no more. Y'all done changed the name.
And nobody even pays attention. That's what's crazy. But on the heels of that, Mars Company has said that they're going to look at rebranding Uncle Ben, which is less problematic to me. Uncle Ben
is... Wasn't he a slave too?
No, he's based... Well, here's the thing. Uncle Ben is a little less hard to tell because Aunt Jemima's been around since 1890. And the very first image, I posted him on my IG, was like... super like darky Mamie, like black in the handkerchief and everything. Then in the 20s and 30s, it was more the Mamie character, like the Gone with the Wind type of Mamie character. And then as they got into the 80s, they got rid of like the fat chubby Mamie face and slimmed her down, but kept the handkerchief on and everything, just because otherwise how would we know she was supposed to be a cook? How would we know she made the pancakes if she didn't have something tied around her head? How we know? And then finally in the 90s, Quaker turned 189, so that's when they gave her the update. They wanted her to look like a working mom, is what they said. So with Uncle Ben didn't come out until the mid-40s, and the company that owned it modeled the guy on the package after this maitre d' at this restaurant in Chicago. His name is Frank something. I'll come up with his name. The name was allegedly taken from this rice farmer in Beaumont, Texas, named Uncle Ben. They've never said what his actual name is, which in and of itself is a problem. named Uncle Ben, who was known for having like this producing these amazing rice crops. But Uncle Ben's farms, whatever you call them, have been based in Texas for most of the company's history. But the name Uncle Ben just invokes slave era stories. Like, it makes you think it's probably about a slave. It makes you think it probably came from a slave. And
I think that man was a slave.
Well, Uncle Ben, they did one update where they, because he used to obviously be in a waiter's uniform, and they updated him to look like he had on a business suit. So that was Uncle Ben. But at this point, even the imagery of them on the packages is so small, where there used to be much more prominent parts of the packaging, that you can tell these companies know they're problematic to have these Black people on these brands that aren't inherently Black brands, that aren't Black owned. So now they're like little itty bitty circles, like damn near, you know, social media abbeys, to the point where like I don't even pay attention when I pick them up anymore because we're just so used to it. But the reality is that first of all, if you have a problem with Aunt Jemima changing, I would ask you why, because what the fuck difference does it make? But also I have to assume that like you only know the iteration of Aunt Jemima that there's been for the past 20 years, because all of us knew that shit came from some Mamie shit. We're just so so much did. Like,
well, no, but let me break down Aunt Jemima shit, because actually, like, it's a little more layers. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, shit, nigga, break it down.
I'm about to break it down the way it needs to be.
You want to talk about the name coming from a minstrel song?
No. Aunt Jemima was a real person. Aunt Jemima was a real person. And she was a former slave named Nancy Green. That's the real person. And apparently, she created the recipe.
For the pancakes.
Yes, she created the recipe. They stole the shit, just like they did that Black man who created Jack Daniels.
Right.
And then in 1935, there was another woman named Anna Short Harrington. That's the woman who's portrayed like on the box. Yes. So the heirs have been suing, and they have several lawsuits out against Quaker Oats for $2 billion in cash and $1 billion in stock. Because they're like, you know, I want my daddy's records. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You stole our shit, and y'all made billions. I mean, Quaker Oats is worth like $121 billion. Something, you know what I'm saying? And like, y'all have made billions of dollars off of our aunt. Mm-hmm. And ain't paid us and she created the recipe. And y'all ain't giving up a goddamn dime. Right. So I think that this is also the reason that they're like, you know what?
Let's just get rid of this shit.
Because that way we could get rid of this lawsuit, because the lawsuit likely is pending. Yeah.
What's ironic is that, that's actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because what's ironic about Aunt Jemima is that when most of us think about her now, we think about the syrup. We don't even think about the pancakes. But it was a pancake brand first.
Yes.
Before
apparently she created that recipe and decided to use certain things to make the pancakes moist. Like, it was her thing. But of course, you know, back then, what rights did she have? You know what I'm saying? Right. They just took her shit and ran with it, and, you know, so be it. Again, same thing with Jack Daniels. Most people don't realize that Jack Daniels is a real person. He's a real white man.
Yeah, no, they've corrected it now. Actually, the Jack Daniels corporate brand 2 years ago
went back and
corrected all their corporate messaging to incorporate. His name wasn't Jack Daniels, though. His name was something else.
The white man's name is Jack Daniels.
Right, but the black man went back to incorporate.
He taught him how to distill.
I want to say it's even like on the site, but they went back and incorporated his story into their corporate
Uncle Nearest.
So I just want y'all to be aware that when these huge corporations are doing this shit, don't think this is because they're being magnanimous.
Because they're being magnanimous. We always assume it's social pressure. Like, we always know it's that. It's not.
Yeah, but it ain't just social.
Because nobody wants to abscond.
Nobody wants to abandon social pressure. It's because they owe these motherfuckers money. Possibly.
So the next thing I need us to talk about, and I posted this on Instagram.
Master P's rice, Uncle Percy.
No, I need us to talk about when we're talking about these racist ass brands. The dude on the cream of wheat box. The cat, I don't know if he's based on a real person, but the character is a house nigga character. So they used to have ads where, you know, like one of them, he's holding up a sign saying, I don't know nothing about no vitamins. I don't know what those is, but the cream of wheat show is good. Like, literally,
Uncle Remus.
They would show him in the kitchen. His name was Rafus Rasmus, let me find out his name. Rasmus, something like that. But they had all these ads depicting him in like some clearly big white people's kitchen, and either feeding the white kids or interacting with the other staff and doing all that other shit. Rastus, that was his name, Rastus. So that's the name of the guy on Cream of Wheat. And he's a house nigga. So, yeah, anyway, all these, but here's the thing. Any brand, any iconography, any nursery rhyme, any turn of phrase, almost anything that is American in origin and that has origins older than like the 1950s, anytime before then, you peel back about three good layers, it's some superbly racist shit. Because mm-hmm. that's what it was here. That's what the country, that's how deeply steeped into our country all this bullshit is. That's what it is in the fabric of everything that is American culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I wanted to bring that up. Let's talk about B. Simone.
I still don't know what this child does outside of scam people.
You said no, Inca? You said no, you good on her?
Who gives a fuck? I can't.
So real quick, B. Simone's an influencer, actually. Like, she's one of these people, like, you know, there's a billion of them out here. She's an influencer. She's a brand. She's a creative. All these words that don't mean jack shit, right?
She's the loud videos that you watch on mute to see if anything interesting is going to happen.
Exactly. And she called
Lil Wayne. Nothing has been interesting. I have not watched any videos.
Yeah, she called Lil Wayne by being on Wildin' Out. With Nick Cannon, because he uses a lot of those people for his show. She decided to put out, quote, air quotes, a book. It's basically like a pamphlet where she's talking about her life and her journey.
It was supposed to be a manifestation guide.
Yeah.
A workbook so people could manifest.
Look at Inca holding up. You got the book, Inca?
She's holding up break glass workbooks to show what it was. It wasn't even
I think Inca got the book. Let me see that book. No, I'm kidding.
But it's supposed to be a guide to manifestation.
Shit I've ever seen in my life.
It was janky as fuck. But allegedly, she was charging $33 for the book, and is allegedly
plus grossed, $15 shipping.
So allegedly grossed over $1 million for this book.
People still haven't gotten them though.
Wait, of course not.
Was the million dollars
mail them to the post office?
Oh, wait, was the million? I don't think the $1 million was supposed to be for the book. I think she was supposed to be saying that she has earned $1 million, period, in all her various entrepreneurial
pursuits. Oh, I took it as the book goes for $1 million.
I don't think that was.
Because I don't think she's making much money doing shit else. A Nick Cannon paying niggas $6 and a chicken lunch like John Cornelius used to do.
Right. They them niggas got some Roscoe.
But she was also on. She was on that little.
Go get that Busy Bee chicken out the back and go on with your business, not your business, nigga.
She was on that.
One breast a piece. One breast a piece.
She was on that Lil Kim show and that Lil Kim reality show. They tried to
girls, oh, the, girls, on the boat. The boat.
And she found somebody. She probably got.
Yeah,
she
girls.
Probably got a, she probably got some little Instagram store or something. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe girl, some eyelashes.
Yeah,
or some
yeah, some shit. Yeah, you know, some
a million. $1 million, but normally when I hear people use those numbers, that is one, that's usually people who are commenting on their gross.
Yes.
Right.
And two, that is usually people talking in a very cumulative sense.
Yeah.
So she
like
may
like in
have
my life, made, in my entire life since I started working at 14.
Or more like, you know, over the course of these past 3 years, this is what I've made. And that is probably that's an attainable amount for her, because I'm sure she does. Not only does she do, I think, ads and promos and things of that nature, because she has such a large following. But, you know, she does walkthroughs. I believe she initially started as some sort of comedian.
Yeah.
So she's probably done shows.
She's probably got YouTube revenue.
She's throwing a little sugar on top of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's rounding up.
She's a slash person.
Yeah.
And ultimately, this book was supposed to be about manifestation and empowerment and things of that nature.
And success, and the way she found, like, she was supposed to be giving tools to success in the way that she found success. And this part is important in terms of her argument about why this shit was so janky, because the point was supposed to be, I manifested this life for me. Let me show you all how I did it so that you also have the steps and the tools so that you can do the same.
Yeah, so she had brought some heat to herself a week or so ago because she was doing an interview with Nick Cannon.
It was longer than that. It just aired a week or so ago. She actually said it before shutdown.
Okay, yeah, so Nick's got a radio show on Power 106 in L.A. now, and he had her on there, and she said that she doesn't want to date a 9-to-5 person because that person won't understand her lifestyle. That turned into a whole huge thing, you know, people arguing whether they thought she was being fucked up by saying it, or, you know, why can't women pick and choose who they want to date, it became a whole thing, right? But it brought heat to her. Then, in the process of that heat from that, there's two so far, there might be more, but so far there's two, I think they're both white women who posted on Twitter, damn, B. Simone stole my shit, and put side-by-side pictures of things that they had created and things that are in the B. Simone's book, and it's literally the same.
But now, wait, before that happened, people were already complaining that they hadn't gotten their order,
mm-hmm.
and people who had gotten their order were video. This is how the women saw it. People who had gotten their order were videotaping them.
How
flimsy it was, because it was literally like, it almost was like a newsprint paper. Like, it was the lowest quality printer paper,
mm-hmm.
period. And even the color copy quality was like, I used to use, like, perfect example. My mom used to work at Head Start when I was in high school. She was a center director at Head Start. And after school, when I had to go over there, I would just be photocopying mad shit just to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I could have made that book there.
They went to somebody's mom who worked down to the Department of Energy after work.
Yeah, because that wasn't even Kinko's.
I use your photocopy.
Word, that wasn't even Kinko's. I used to do better.
The cover fell off.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I saw that one. Yes.
I was showing, and the cover fell off. Like, I used to make better. I used to use Columbia's copiers as though I had a print shop all the fucking time, and my shit came out better than that because we had glossy paper and all. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
so as people were posting about the book, like you said, two different white women found, one of them who's a creator whose stuff is on Pinterest, and one who actually is the creator of one of those like happiness journals, because there's mm-hmm. a bunch of these kind of journals mm-hmm. that are supposed to help mm-hmm. you like vision and map
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
What really frustrated me is that it's not that it's unique for you to steal the prompt ideas, because there are so many of these things floating around, and most of them mm-hmm. ultimately all say the same shit, right? In different ways. But, like, you couldn't, like, switch them bitches up, change the questions a little bit.
Nothing.
And a couple of them, they took the exact sheet.
It was their exact sheet.
And, like, and even the other pages that were original pages, there was a bunch of, like, I guess what was supposed to, like, journal entries that were, like, scribbles from her. They looked like she wrote them in, like, 3 quick minutes. The whole book looked like somebody sat down and put the shit together in, like, 3 hours, maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
It looks like a project in my language arts class in seventh.
In seventh grade, though, right? In middle school. Super janky. Super fucking janky.
Thank you.
Like, no thought, no time. No, I've put a workbook together before. I put one together for when I did Jovi's Friendship Show, Jovi's Day of Purpose, when I did a workshop. I spent like a week on that shit and doing the design and, you know, putting it all together and coming up with original ideas and what am I trying to say and blah, blah, blah. And like, if you're charging $35, bitch, like, plus come shipping. On, man. That's plus $15 shipping?
That was the people that bought it. Nothing right. about B. Simone to me says that she even has a journal.
Right.
Wait, isn't this the girl who they were talking about never had a boyfriend and never had an orgasm?
I have no idea because I don't know enough
about I know about the orgasm part. I know she always complains about not having a boyfriend. I don't know enough.
She maybe needs a man.
But it could be. What was it going to say, bro?
She is. So here's my issue and why I took issue with this, right? It's like you cannot get on these platforms and talk about all of the sisterhood and we doing big things, right? And in turn, like to me, there are a ton of qualified Black women who would have been able to sit with her and actually walk her through this process to make a real book. She has a platform. She had the ability to do this, but like she didn't like to me what it signified to me. It was a lazy money grab.
Absolutely, it was a lick. It was hitting a lick.
And what was even more disturbing is that women are like, that's who they think of is going to get them over the hump in life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is something predatory is a very strong word, and I don't want to say
but
that.
But it is predatory.
There's a culture. Yes, there's a culture of sort of identifying groups that have these sorts of issues. You know, we see it in finance all the time. You know,
it's like multi-level marketing, yes. Except it's on an influencer scale. And yes. I believe this was her doing an empowerment brunch, but since we're in shutdown, she couldn't do an empowerment brunch and charge her tickets. She gave them this fuck-ass book.
Yes, yes. The brunch where you go, you spend $200 for some dry-ass chicken breasts, and three people speak, and y'all got some room temperature-ass water. And you know, y'all take photos, and that's grinding.
That's networking. That's networking. Yeah.
You know, and I don't look, man. You cannot say that this was your experience and then have this coming out, right? Like you basically deaded your brand right there.
Yeah,
like if your brand was supposed to be about you manifesting this and kind of going through this, then yes, you probably could have done this in far better ways that, yes, you would have had to pay people and you would have had to maybe cut them in on the back end deal, but it would have been far better for you in the long run. But I don't think managers and people who are trying to harness these folks have that ability. I don't think they see the forest for the trees.
They don't. Yeah. But also,
What I feel like is her manager or somebody around her kind of came with the idea. We should write a book.
No, I don't. I don't think that at all. I think this shit was her idea. I'm not putting this shit on
nobody
else.
But she didn't write anything.
I know it wasn't supposed to be that kind of a book. It was supposed. Have you guys? Well, y'all are niggas. Y'all don't know. There's a bunch of these kind of books out there in the world that are planners/slash guys. None of them have anything or any real substance in it. It's a blurb. It's some prompts.
No, but what I'm saying is like one page. But what I'm saying is that she said she farmed everything out. She literally.
I know, but what I'm saying is she was fucking lying because she doesn't want to admit that she did that cheap shit.
You think the farming part was a lie?
Yes, I think the farming is a lie. You know why? Because she said she hired a fucking design company. You know who owns the design company? Her manager. I think that her manager sat there and put this dumbass shit together. Because here's the thing, which one is worse? That she put no effort at all into putting this book together and gave no, because that's really, that she put no effort at all into putting this book together and put out a cheap product, or that she decided to sell a product that was based on her and her vision and her story, but that she's telling people, but that she actually not only hired somebody who ended up doing cheap work, but apparently never gave any design input at all. Like, I want the prompts to be about this. I want them to look like that. We need a page that says this. But also never saw the final and approved the final work before it went out. Like, you sound stupider on the second than you do on the first. I would rather you think I'm shady than you think I'm that bad at business and protecting my brand. Because the second option, which is what she's saying now, which is I farmed out this stupid-ass book. Every page of that book is stupid. Like, there's even, like, this fake collage page that's like movies that inspire you, and the movies include like Drumline. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Wolf of Wall Street. How did Wolf of Wall Street inspire you? That motherfucker went to jail and lost all his money. What are you talking about? Like, and there's no explanation around, and there's no nothing. It literally, like, they cut the titles out and slapped them on a page and photocopied it. It literally is a middle school project. I could have put something better than that together in high school. That's how I know her dumbass did it, and did because she didn't put any effort into it. And the thing is, you really could, between Canva and like getting reference materials from other places, literally all she had to do was really just take a moment and think about what she wanted to look like. It's not even any harder than putting
she just wanted to hit a quick click.
I don't believe for 2 seconds she hired a company to do that bullshit. But again, you still look like a fraud to me, to your fans, even if you do, because even as you're trying to give that explanation, you're saying two things that don't make sense. One, I wanted this to be my story. I wanted this to be about my journey. I wanted to share with y'all how I did this. But then second to that, you're saying, what, you didn't approve the final that went out? You didn't see it? That wasn't your input? Because if they are taking sheets straight from the internet and just putting them in there, that means that you didn't say, I want a page that's about this. I want a page that's about this. I want to come up with some prompts that are about this. That means that you gave no input. But second to that, she was like, I've never written a book. This still ain't writing a book. It ain't not a whole page of copy on this whole motherfucking book. And the things that are in there look like they were written on the printed pages that I did see, they look like they were written on a notes app, literally. And then somebody printed out the JPEG of the notes app and put that bitch on the page. Like, is that janky?
I don't take any glee
in watching her fall.
But like, I think that this is a kind of a lesson for a lot of people who are trying to be content creators and influencers, and that this is not an easy task, right? Like, creating content, being a writer is not, being able to articulate things. And again, I go back to the fact that she's on social media. There is no shortage of Black women who would have been able to, who do this professionally. Let's just take the professionals out of this. There are a ton of qualified Black women who work regular ass jobs, who are more than qualified to have been able to walk her through this process to get an actual book of substance. And the fact that, you know, you didn't want to take that route, and you didn't think to take that route, is a little arrogant. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like it was, and you know, look, man, she's taking some L's, and I think she's taking some lumps, and I think she's, you know, seeing the double-edged sword of having, you know, people having all of this access to you, right? Like, the same things that kind of propped her up, like having all of this access in this platform, is sort of the same thing that is, you know, really sort of crippling her, particularly right now. Because, you know, motherfuckers is home.
Ain't with nothing to do. Right.
With nothing to do. And the fact that you would think that $33, like that, the fact that you thought that was $33, is such an odd ass number.
That price point was obscene.
That is the oddest, most random.
Anchor, how much is that book, Anchor?
$16.
And that's a quality book.
And that's a book.
with words on the pages.
Content.
I mean, just like Russ said earlier, she's really, you know, damaged her quote unquote brand. I don't know what she'll do to try to fix this at this point, but like, she's bottom line, but besides all this shit, she's gonna get sued.
She's definitely getting sued because she fucked with the white women. But the other point is, I just searched her name real quick to make sure I wasn't missing anything. That somebody who follows her, because I don't follow her, I don't know none of this. Saying, this one girl said, so for a few weeks, B. Simone talked about how much time she put into her book, how she worked on it for so long, blah, 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 just to say today she didn't work on it and she had nothing to do with it. And y'all were taking manifestation advice from her. So either way, she's fucked. I personally would have taken the route of, you know what? I made some bad decisions. I did half the book. I didn't know how to go with the prompts. I didn't, we pulled them from some poor places, my bad. I owe y'all a new book and I'm going to deal with this with the other one. To be like, yo, I ain't know. Yeah, also suggest that if you are a woman, you know, because all these motherfucking internet entrepreneurs be talking about my brand. How much are you protecting your brand when you are putting out a book with your name on it?
How much are you?
But like, when you're claiming that you let somebody put something out in your name without seeing it. Like, she's claiming she let somebody put work out in her name without even seeing it.
And how much are you not even doing your Googles.
Exactly.
Like, if you're going into business with someone, that is like the most basic thing. Who am I getting into business with?
Exactly.
What have they done? Why am I entrusting my product to this person to help me see it to fruition, right? Like, there is a process to doing real business when you have a real company. Because what happens when you have a real company is you have liability.
Yep.
You have actual real tangible shit that you got, you can lose if you do not go through this the proper way. Okay. I don't think for one second that there is a team. I can't imagine anyone, you know, anybody that is even remotely close to an attorney.
Yeah.
Said, this is okay.
Let's go.
Right. And now I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to backdate contracts to show that she did outsource this.
Yeah.
With some third party company.
Trying to get a cousin. Hey, sign this. I'm gonna take care of you later.
Right. But again, her manager literally owns, they took the post down now, but her manager literally owns a fucking design company that originally took credit for the book, and then after this all came out and they were trying to be like, oh, we hired an outside design company, then they removed that post from the account. Like, it's all, and her manager found out, her manager has been involved in some other scammy shit. Like, she was on one of these judge shows pursuing somebody about some weave, and the judge
there is
all very scammy.
Yes. And last thing I'm gonna say is there is a disconnect between talent and managers and executives. Yes. And you can almost no longer tell the difference.
Yes.
You know, there used to be a time when there were very clear distinctions, but everyone is so into this entrepreneurship porn that they are, you know, selling this shit as like the only way for you to go, and this is what you got to do, mm-hmm. and this is the quality that you present to people. And that's crazy, because listen, if she had given a quality book, like with some depth, the $33 price point probably would have been the last thing people talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that she shipped off from trash and then people were like, damn, I spent $40 on this trash is not a good look. Let's end it with, wait, real quick. Inca, are they shooting fireworks down there a lot? Where you at?
No. We are a community of mostly veterans.
They with the white people.
We don't find that in heavy military community.
Oh, yeah, because of people.
PTSD.
Yeah, because I'm in New York, and I'm seeing it, I guess, in other cities, too. It's like constant fireworks going on for the past 3-4 weeks. Like, every night, they just be, like, setting them off. I don't know.
They bored.
I don't know what that means.
Didn't they make them legal in a bunch of states?
Maybe. Oh, I don't know.
Recently. Yeah, they lifted. It's not... They say illegal fireworks, but it's not. It's one of those things where it's not really an enforced law.
Yeah.
Unless you're like super wilding out.
Yeah.
And you know, people don't really, you know, they just kind of deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Last person I want to talk about is I guess we'll save that for next week because that's going to take some time. I wanted to mention young man Lecrae.
Oh, the thing. I didn't watch that shit. I've been protecting my spirit.
Okay.
I can't just be watching any coonerific shit going on and white men talking about
white blessings
instead of white. I do want to know how Lecrae responded, though. So y'all can.
So Lecrae is a really, you know, famous, large gospel artist. He's been around for quite a while. He's with some Grammys. Very well respected. So he lives in Atlanta. I think he might be from Atlanta originally, but he's definitely based there. And so they had a panel a few days ago with him, a megachurch pastor who's a white man, I think his name is Louis Gigolo, and the CEO of Chick-fil-A. And they were basically, so they were talking about the Crazy Black, by the way, for those who don't know. And they were talking about, everything that's going on now and how it's affected Christianity and how we could, you know, use Christianity to help combat a lot of racism and this and that. And so the megachurch pastor, I think it's a non-denominational church, he's got a lot of black parishioners as well, said, in paraphrase, but basically said in a nutshell that it's not white privilege, it's actually white blessings that slavery happened. Because white people, because of slavery, we're able to build this great society that we have now, right? Now, Lecrae is nodding his head when your man's saying it's like, yeah, you know, you kind of, I see what you're saying. He's nodding
I want y'all to see my face.
He's not in his head at the white pastor. The white pastor goes on and on and on and on and on. So somebody posts a clip of this. Of course, people go nuclear. Like, what the fuck is this dude talking about? And Lecrae, why'd you basically let this white man spit in your face and not say anything? So there was, of course, some black women who got at Lecrae, justfully so, for like sitting there and letting this white man spout this racism and not really say anything. And then they showed a clip of later on that Lecrae was said something like, well, you know, I don't know if it was quite right blessed, but you know, Lecrae was doing that dance that a lot of people do, especially right. in the Christian community, well, where
you don't
like,
want to make, you don't want to,
you don't want to offend nobody.
No shit, yeah.
You don't want to offend nobody. So he's kind of like almost not laughing, but you know, the little chuckle and I'm like, well, you know, it could be a little different, man. You know, kind of thing like that, yeah. Right? But he doesn't put the guy to, you know, in the corner, put the guy to the mat and be like, basically, I mean, he's not going to curse, but basically like, yo, the fuck what you talking about? So black women get at him, and then he starts trying to kind of go on back at them on Twitter. And so a couple of women really roasted his ass, in the Christian way, by the way, didn't curse him out or nothing, but just tore him a new asshole. And then he came back the next day and was like, well, I had a conversation with the pastor last night and explained to him how I felt. And, you know, he understood and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, yo, my man, it's too late, bro.
And he put out a video of him at a protest the night before the interview, which is like, nigga, nobody cares. Because here's the thing. And I'm saying, he apparently did not get that memo yet. And I don't know what black people he has around him in his life. But every black person I know, those of us who work in white spaces, those of us who are usually, even if we're trying to educate, we're trying to educate in a way where we navigating around these white people. Everybody's over that shit. It's like we all got an email in the last 10 days that said, fuck any level of accommodation, right? Yeah. Especially if white people are really all of a sudden, if every goddamn white brand, fucking institution, goddamn, every company in that I could possibly consider done sent me some Black Lives Matter shit in the past 2 weeks, right? So if that's how y'all really feel, then y'all about to get these actual frank-ass answers and reactions. And I guess Lecrae ain't get that memo yet, because here's the thing, Lecrae is not just, he's actually probably a bigger Christian artist than he is a gospel artist.
He's definitely more on the Christian
which
side.
Which is the difference between being a pop artist and an R&B artist.
Exactly.
But like, if your theology does not allow you to stand and talk about exactly why racism is fucked up in clear terms, then you got an issue with your theology, bro. Like, that's my thing. If you are a black man in the church, and whatever theology you practice, whatever forgiveness you practice, whatever Christian love and brotherly love you practice requires you to be accepting of the people who aren't accepting of you, fuck that. Fuck all of that. It's flawed anyway. So I'm not really trying to hear what he said after the fact, because what he said, what you say in the moment is the difference making point. Yeah, it's not what you
point.
Do
you
after.
You missed the moment.
It's not what you do after.
Yeah, and then coming back and saying you spoke to, and then the pastor, he dropped something, whatever. Like, it's too late, fam. Like,
it's too late.
My thing is with the pastor, like, yo, fam, like, stand on that shit. That's what you meant, that shit.
If you said it, say it.
You that's what you meant, B. So stand on it. Like, don't come back today and be like, well, after some further review, then you a grown man.
Further review, my motherfucker. What
it ain't even about that.
Review do you even need?
It doesn't. What I'm saying is that he's a grown man. So that means he's thought this for a long time. He's not like he's 17 years old.
Right.
He's go ahead.
Not taking a conference call with Chick-fil-A to begin with. Like, what are we even doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, like, but Lecrae is like Nye said, Lecrae has been in those spaces for his whole career. So he's, you know, he's probably, maybe out of his conscious or subconscious, but he's been the get along nigga. You know what I'm saying? For his whole career. Like, yo, like, you know, he's a nice guy, and he's that. So he's gotten, you know, been very successful. He's made a lot of money. He makes a great living. He actually gets Grammys. He does all that stuff. So he's like, in his mind, I think he's probably like, hey, you know, I'm, and I don't think he's on some like fuck black people shit. I think he's just kind of like, I think he's done that so long he didn't even realize that's what he does
was doing
anymore.
It. And he
just,
said,
that's just what he does.
That's just what he does. And he said, and I went to a predominantly white high school. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood. I went to a PWI. I fucking, I was All right, I get it. However, my goal has always been to be like, actually, you're wrong. And it ain't even got to be like a whole like, actually, you're wrong. But mm-hmm. it's got to be like, nah, you got this all twisted. And let me tell you why. Because these people do not actually hear Black perspectives often directly
from
Black people.
Ever. Right?
So you actually do have an opportunity. The labor should not be on us to educate. But when you recognize that Black people are around white people all the fucking time, and there's a whole lot of white people who don't really ever have to have conversations with Black people ever if they don't want to, right? There is an opportunity there for you to say, actually, let me tell you as a Black person what this really is about. Not what you see on the internet, not what you saw on the fucking news clip, not none of that shit. Like, from the Black person you know to you, let me tell you what this is. But Lecrae did say, he said that he realized that he missed an opportunity to do that, but nigga, you missed it. So let's see what you do the next time, right? And that's my thing. Like, instead of getting mad at people for holding you accountable, change your behavior. Change your behavior. Show us you can do, because that's another, this it's only a matter of time, like I said at the top of the show. As fed up as Black people are with white people, we getting fed up with each other too. So the internal accountability is about to turn up also as well, right? And we're going to have the uncomfortable conversations with each other, because we pull that same shit. We got to keep the peace. We can't be divisive. We can't fuck that. Everybody can get it right about now. And that includes, I know this was the last person you want to talk about, that includes fuck ass Lee Merritt and Sean King for taking these fucking families. Sean King is positioning himself for a pivot to the Republican Party. I promise you. So yesterday, did you guys see that Lee Merritt took
the family members to
the White House?
Ahmaud Arbery and a couple other families up to see
Like
Trump.
It was six of them.
And then they got kicked out.
Well, allegedly got kicked out. But Ahmaud, and you know, Lee was all like, we declined to participate in the photo op, and it wasn't about that. First of all, you could have gone to Senate without any of that. But also, what I saw last night, which I missed initially, was that Ms. Wanda, Ahmaud Arbery's mom, was on Fox News talking about how Trump was compassionate and how she believed he really cared about the people. That interview does not happen unless Lee Merritt, who is her official spokesperson, okays it to happen. And it happened
I also question if they declined the photo op or the meeting just went left and Trump just like said, fuck out my office before it got to that point.
And
like, I don't think they went up there. I don't think we're not going to take no pictures. Trump don't move like that.
Otherwise, what was the point of you even being there? The whole point of them being there was for Trump to be able to say he talked to them.
I like black people.
Whether they took a photo or not, the whole point of Sean messaging that they were going there, like Sean messaged it actively, consistently, and in Sean's messaging, he wasn't just saying, like, he could have said, "We, Trump ain't shit, but we have to make some bipartisan efforts because that's who's in leadership." But his shit was, Dems have turned their back. We need to stop being addicted to Democrats.
Yeah.
We can't rely on them. So it was active anti-Dem messaging. And I think that Van Jones called this nigga and said, come on over to this side. They got a check. Mm-hmm. I can get you some positioning. Bernie's out. You know what I mean? He can't help you no more. You hitched the wagon to that nigga. Biden ain't got shit for you. Come on over here. It's okay over here. You can make it look like you affecting change from the inside. And I think he got Merritt on board because they do everything together. I'm just saying, watch that fucking space. And if this is the year that we can get Sean King the fuck out of here, I'm all the better for that, too. I'm tired of all of it.
That first of all, Sean King is like a motherfucking cockroach. Niggas been trying to get him up out of here forever, and he just keep popping up and keep popping up with fucking GoFundMes. Nigga had a crackhead price.
No money.
Yeah.
$3. Let me hold
$3. Who has the $3? Yo. I'm dead serious.
He sent out an email.
$3,
yeah, it's
cracking. They was getting hot. I'm just saying. Because, and to be honest with you, the price kept going down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's when I was like,
nigga. I give it to y'all.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, Sean King is what he is. I mean, Lee Merritt, again, I will say, yes, he absolutely is accountable here. But I will also say that, you know, Ahmaud's family has to say yes to this, right?
Absolutely.
They have to be conjoined with the person who is sort of operating as their front person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was bad advice, mostly because you had no idea what this order was going to be.
Yeah.
So you go there. right? And let's just say they were nice and they played house and everything was fine and you guys sat up there and he basically, you know, that bullshit he signed, it was nothing. It was of no consequence. It was none. Inconsequential.
None.
Okay? And I think that, you know, the kid Lecrae, and not a kid, he's a grown man, he's 40 yeah. years old. That to me is what happens when people are not equipped to have the banter and the back and forth with other people. And I talk about this quite often, is that we so often don't have a level of deference. We don't know the things that we don't know, and we don't acknowledge those things. And we don't say, yo, man, I am out of my depth here.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not a space that I can walk in confidently. And I'm not saying he should have turned down that opportunity, but I'm saying, you know, maybe you sit down and have a discussion the night before with some of your mentors, have a discussion with some of the people who, you know, can kind of prep you and sort of be there for you. But I also think, too, that this was a guy sitting there thinking about his career, yeah, thinking about, yo, look, man, if that was it. And so, you know, all these niggas is jive niggas to me. I don't have no expectations. I don't, like I talked about this shit with Drew Brees. I do not put expectations on those people.
Yeah.
So they don't disappoint
me. They can't let you down.
They don't anger me.
Yeah.
He's doing what's best for him.
Yeah.
And for his pockets and for his situation. And you're right. You know, Sean is definitely going to do that. You know, Van gets up there. He's fucking praising. He's praising 45. Like he just made some incredible sweeping legislation.
Yeah.
And it's bullshit. He got up there and, whatever, man.
Van been on that fuck shit for a minute, but he slickly slides back and forth because he'll be sucking off Trump 1 minute, and then the next minute I look up and he's hosting some shit on Revolt or BET.
Whose fault that is? Revolt and BET.
Because as long as
they give these niggas the space, because even when he's sucking off Trump, he's still claims that he's doing it in support of black people. He still says it's about the positivity.
I'm gonna tell you what saves Van on the real. Van is an attractive man.
Yeah.
That's what saves Van.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean ain't gonna
with get CNN credentials.
Yes. That is what it is. My nigga, like we can full stop. If Van was a fat, ugly motherfucker,
he would have
been up out of here.
Yeah.
Like your hot dog neck man.
Yeah.
Roland.
Oh, your man Roland.
Yeah. And that's also why, to your point, Sean actually isn't on, and Roland's mad because, what you call it, what's my girl's name? The newscaster said that CBS said that Roland wasn't the right type of black that they wanted on her.
Who, Gail?
So, not Gail, the mixed one.
Soledad O'Brien.
Oh, okay.
She said that, she shared that a producer once said that Roland wasn't the right type of black that they wanted her to have on her show, but that Charles Brooks was.
Charles Blow was.
But that's also why Sean ain't on TV a lot, because his ass looks sloppy and stupid.
Yeah.
But it's Van, you know, he comes across, I always say that if I want to pull out, I can make a lot of fucking money. He comes across polished. Yeah. He's got CNN credentials. He used to work in the Obama administration, even though Obama fucking fired his ass. But it's like, still, I really think, this is not, y'all know I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes shit just be too left. I really think he told Sean, you can do this under the guise of, you know, actually getting work done for our people, which is what Van claims. Like, you know, he touts that fucking bill that reform bill Trump passed over and over again, as though Trump hasn't done way more harm than good over 4 years. But I think that's why Sean is messaging it as he is, which is like, we can't wait for the Dems to win. We can't be relying on the Dems. The Dems have turned their back. The Dems don't work for us. The Dems aren't effective.
Whatever.
I believe this nigga is setting up for a pivot.
Yeah. Let's also not forget that.
But I believe that's when he'll lose people. So
but also, let's not forget that everything else said about Van is right, but let's not forget the other big joker. That nigga signed the Rock Nation.
Oh, I don't think I knew that word.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he is. They represent him.
Yes, they represent him. So he's also walking in there. with the fucking Hove card.
But also, you know, not what I'm
saying, it, which is why the revolt and the BT shit happens all the time, because that's, you got to keep this thing on both sides of the fence. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, I think I'm hoping moving forward, like niggas like Sean, Van, Merritt, and there's a bunch of others, you know, that aren't as kind of like blatant as like a Candace Owens. Like, oh, we can get a lot of these spooks just out by the door, up the fuck up out of here. Because they obviously are playing with a double agenda.
Word life.
That's it.
Inca, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Can I just say two quick things?
Yes.
Please,
sure.
Please.
Number one, thank you, guys. Y'all have been so sweet to me and my family for, well, Ivy's three now, so.
Aww.
Yes.
You're more than welcome.
We appreciate y'all so, so much. And also, we have a Pop Life drinking game that I want to let y'all in on. I'm out of wine. As you can see. But,
don't be going to make no new babies tonight now.
No. But every show, a couple of things happen, and we take a little drink, and I want to let y'all in on it. So firstly, if Jeff doesn't know the date,
yeah. Oh, so y'all be drinking out the gate.
We be drinking. Or if Jeff says, way back.
Oh, no. Yeah, I haven't done that in a while. Shit, I gotta.
Nah, you do it, but you don't. I don't think you realize you do it so much.
Okay.
Yeah. If you correct Jeff on something.
Well, I know you.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
If you mention John Legend.
That's a good one.
And Sean, if you have no shout outs.
Oh my God, this is great.
Oh,
Inca, you went on mute. Inca, unmute.
You went on mute.
So you said if Sean has no shout outs, and then what?
If Sean has no shout outs, or if he says the word nuance.
Oh shit, nuance.
Really? I guess I do say that a lot.
The end of the episode, every time we are completely out of wine.
I love it.
That what we were drinking.
That's amazing. I'm gonna actually encourage our listeners to adopt that.
Send us that. We're gonna post that.
We gotta add if Sean either says cut the shit or what are we really talking about here?
Yeah, what are we doing here?
Yes. No, y'all are our favorites. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, absolutely.
Thank you for coming on.
Love to you and Travis and Inca, y'all family. We love y'all. And we'll have you back 100%.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'm here. So whenever.
All right, cool.
All right.
So that's it. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.